Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guests today are Tina Fiorda and Hilda Cameron, her sisters, and they've recently published a book called A Book of Insight. I have read it, and it's a remarkable book. Very high quality spiritual teachings, as far as I'm concerned. And I can tell you that their whole experience, which led them to write the book, is in itself very interesting. So, without further ado, I will welcome Tilda and Tina to the program. Are you there?
We're here. Thank you so much for having us on your show, Mike. We really appreciate it.
Well, having read your book, I've been really looking forward to speaking with you. I've read so many books, I've lost count, and I do consider myself to be of a certain level of spiritual understanding, and therefore, I think I was quite qualified in saying your book was really superb. Now, it would seem to me that you've obviously both been working towards bringing out this book, your earlier experiences, sort of psychic experiences, and the way you were attracted to the Ouija board, which is how you brought the book through, all suggests this was obviously pre-planned to be part of your lives. But what is amazing, I think, in these days, is that something should be channeled through the Ouija board, because it sounds a very laborious way of doing it. And I couldn't help smiling when I read one of your comments in the book. And you can start talking by telling me what the answer to this one is, that it took you 3 years to write one page on meditation.
Well, something like that, yes.
Yeah.
What happened was Tina and I have been experimenting with Ouija board for many, many years. And one day in 2004, we sat down to one of our Ouija sessions, and we started to receive information on meditation, and about a page of information came through to us. And at the end of this session, the entities that were channeling to us, and there are three entities that come through, they are our spirit guides, and they refer to themselves as Melanie M. and Demna. Well, at the end of this session, they proceeded to tell us that this was going to be the beginning of chapter one of our book. And Tina and I had, this was really a surprise to us, because we hadn't sat down to write a book. We'd never discussed writing a book, and it was the furthest thing from our minds. So because it was the furthest thing from our minds, we didn't take it very seriously. And because of that, we didn't actually follow up on it until 3 years later. And then 3 years later, we sat down to have a session. Well, we'd had many sessions in between, but this particular session, we discussed the possibility of revisiting the session from 3 years prior to see if our guides were really serious about wanting to write this book. And so we sat down, we had a session, and sure enough, there they were, right on cue, and they just began delivering the rest of the information. And at that time, they told us that they were going to deliver 16 chapters to us. They wouldn't tell us the names of the chapters, they wouldn't tell us what the book was about, but they did tell us that it was to be called A Book of Insight. And 3 years later, we seriously began channeling the book.
Right. So from the year 2007, how long was it before you were able to complete the book?
Well, I think we did a few sessions in 2007, and we decided, because we were both working and Christmas holidays were coming up, we decided to wait until after the new year. And then right after the new year of 2008, we picked up where we left off. And we did it religiously, I would say 5 to 6 days a week, 5 nights a week. And we took us about two months to complete it, doing it practically every night. And then once we completed it, we Tilde transcribed it and we read it. And it actually raised more questions. So we made a list of questions, and we ask the questions and channel the answers, and then that got edited into the book, which is why it reads like a question and answer session.
Right.
And I would say that took about another month. So about 3 months of channeling brought us the book.
Gosh, that, you must have been applying yourself to the channeling then almost full time, because although I know that you said you obviously speeded up by speaking the words into a digital recorder, it does sound a rather sort of long-winded way of doing it.
It really is. I mean, for the most part, we're just Tina reads what comes through, and they seem to use my energy for some reason. But yeah, for the most part, it's coming through a letter at a time, but we're also able to pick up thoughts at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not until we read back what was delivered to us that we have any idea what they actually delivered to us. Because if you can imagine something coming through to you a letter at a time and just trying to sort of stay focused on what the message is when it's coming through to you in such a disjointed manner, it's really hard to follow.
Yeah.
So we were really surprised when we actually read it back and saw what they had delivered. I mean, to this day, we're still amazed.
Yeah, and I would say it's a cross between spelling it out and receiving it at the same time, because while Tilly is... And I are doing working the planchette, and I'm speaking it into a microphone. The sensation I get is a sensation of it being spelled out, but at the same time, I tend to get the words in my mind, and so there are times when I can finish a sentence for them before they finish it, and then they'll let us know if we're right or wrong.
Yeah,
so that helps
me
speed it up.
Now, they seem to put a lot of emphasis on meditation. And they have said that it is a spiritual communication with the source. Now, what are your thoughts about that, about the value of meditation?
Well, what our guides tell us is that meditation is the one most important thing that we can do for our spiritual development. And so much so that it got to the point where we'd sit down to have a session and our guides would come through and the first thing they would say to us was meditate, because they knew if we'd meditated or not. And they would not deliver any more material to us until we stopped the session, took a half hour or so to meditate, and then came back to it. But they tell us that this is our direct connection to our source. It's our direct connection to our higher self. And it's a wonderful tool to use, not just to tune into our higher selves, but to help develop our intuitive skills as well as our psychic skills. Because as spiritual beings, these skills, for lack of a better word, are inherent in each and every one of us. They're just a part of who we are. The problem is we've lost touch with them, and we don't know how to... Well, many of us don't know that we even have these tools available to us, much less how to use them. So meditation is a wonderful way to help you redevelop those skills.
Right. What form of meditation did you two use? Because there are various types of meditation.
Well, what I use, this is Tina speaking, what I find that I like to use is I use a CD that has nature sounds or soft musical sounds that just help to distract my mind and focus on my breathing. Because what happens is a lot of times when we're meditating, we get those thoughts that come up in our mind because our ego doesn't want to turn itself off. And you tend to get this chatter in your mind. So what I find is that by focusing on my breath and using my breath as my om and listening to a CD of a soft, tranquil sound, it helps to take me to that space. And I find that's what works best for me. Although what our guides tell us is there's no one way to meditate that is the way. It's whatever way works for you is the way that you should use.
Yes. Now, they've said that we have created the world through cooperative mass belief. And they do go on to talk about the law of attraction. In what way did they refer to you about that?
Well, our guides refer to the law of attraction as magnetism. And they tell us that everything is magnetism. It's all about attracting or repelling. And your thoughts and beliefs do create your reality. And your thoughts have energy. And the energy of your thoughts and the energy of your beliefs have a magnetic quality to them. And they will attract magnetic situations of that caliber. For instance, they say, do you ever notice how negative things always happen to negative people? And this is because their negative thoughts are attracting negative situations. And then they feel that they're victims of life. But that's the furthest thing from the truth. They're not victims of life. They're victims of their belief systems. So they tell us that if we want to change our lives, we have to change our minds. And we do that by examining our beliefs and examining our thoughts and determining how they affect our lives, whether they affect them in a positive way or whether they affect our lives in a negative way. So all of this is connected to magnetism, which is the law of attraction.
Mm-hmm. Because we have to remember that everything in existence exists on a energetic vibratory level. If you break matter down to its, you know, most minute form, you're left with energy, and this is something that quantum physics is studying as well. I mean, when you think about an atom that makes up all physical matter, well, if you look at that atom is more than 99.9% space. And then if you break that down further, you're left with quarks, and if you just keep breaking it down, you're left with pure energy. I mean, really, everything that we see is actually an illusion, but our physical senses perceive it as physical reality. But it's all made up of energy, and that includes our thoughts, our beliefs, our emotions. So energy does scientifically affect energy.
Right. Now, on the same subject, they told you that it's obviously wise to focus on attaining good health and not on ridding yourself of bad health. Explain how that works.
Well, it's once again, it's exactly what you focus on that you create. So if you're, as an example, if you're wanting to lose weight, well, if you focus on wanting to lose weight, in a sense, you're focusing on the problem. You're focusing on the fact that you have excess weight that you need to lose. Whereas instead, what you should do is focus on the body that you want to create for yourself, that you want to achieve. So focus on good health, focus on being slim rather than losing weight. You know, it's really very subtle, but it's important that you pay attention to those subtleties, and it's really important where you put your focus.
And also, I think if you focus on losing weight, you're focusing on the fact that you're too heavy. So, yeah.
And the same with money. You know, many people want to attract money. Well, don't focus on the lack of money in your life, because when you focus on the lack of money, you are in a state reaffirming that lack. You're confirming it to the universe, and the universe says, okay, yes, I agree. You have a lack of wealth. Whereas instead, what you want to do is focus on wealth creation. Focus on, even if it just starts as an imaginary thought that you are surrounded by wealth. And if you look at your life, I'm sure that each and every one of us can find areas in our life where we are surrounded by wealth. Focus on that, and that will help to confirm it to the universe and help to create more of it.
Yes, indeed. I guess some people will find it difficult not to think about their problems, but you're talking of everything being energy. So I imagine there is a degree of how much, if you like, emotion they put into their thoughts. In other words, you could think about something without giving it any energy. Would you say that was applicable?
Yeah, you definitely, the emotions, the feelings that you attach to those thoughts are very, very important, because those emotions and those feelings are creative. One thing that our guides stress to us is that we are all fragments of God or the Source, and the Source is the ultimate creator. So as fragments of the ultimate creator, we too are creators, and many of us just don't realize that we are creators and that we are creating every moment of the day. So it is very important to be aware that you are creating, and therefore to be very aware of where, of what kind of thoughts you're putting forth and what kind of emotions and energy you're attaching to those thoughts, because those emotions are very, especially if they're very strong, play a very powerful role in creating your reality.
And yes, what our guides tell us is that every cell in our body is affected by our emotions and our beliefs. So it not only affects the situations around us that we attract into our lives, but it affects our bodies too.
Right. So they've actually said in the chapter about the Source that mankind is a great experiment for the Source, for it has allowed mankind to be co-creators, which is what you're confirming. But it's interesting to know that we've even been in that role as a co-creator even before we came to the Earth.
Yeah, well, what they tell us is that before we come to the Earth, we are actually planning out what we want our lives to be when we get here. I mean, we're not planning out every moment of it, but any of the sort of the major decisions, we've decided ahead of time where we're going to be born, who our parents are going to be, things of that nature. But once we get here, we have free will, and we can change the course of our life at any time.
And what I'd like to add to what Tildy's saying is that what our guides tell us in the Book of Insights about the Source is that in the beginning, the Source existed as a singularity. And the Source wanted to understand all of what it could become. And in wanting to have that understanding, it exploded forth into the answer, which is what we term the Big Bang. And once it exploded forth into the answer, it created fragments of itself, which are Source souls. And so we are those Source souls that are fragmented portions of God. So in being fragmented portions of God, basically we are God having a human experience. And the beauty of it is that because we are God having an earthly experience, we have direct access to the energy of the Source. The only thing is we have fallen asleep and we've forgotten that we are divine beings. And the beauty of it, though, right now, is that there is an awakening happening on this planet, and we are beginning to realize that we are divine, and we are beginning to wake up to the greater reality that exists around us. So there's a lot of changes that are taking place right now, and part of the reason that this book is coming out is because of the awakening.
Yes, I agree with you absolutely on that. There are, as you say, a number of books that have come out, and also many articles at the moment, both written personally or through channels, that are talking about this immense period of change. And I get the impression people are sensing it's a time of change, and they're directing their thoughts to something better, I think, than what we've been experiencing.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree with that. And I mean, one of the signs I notice that people are starting to wake up is just the fact that we can sit down, we can do a radio interview and discuss this very topic. I mean, we go back just a few years ago, not that long ago, and what was considered a very esoteric topic is now starting to become very mainstream. I mean, we're seeing more and more television shows discuss these types of, you know, what we call metaphysical topics. We see, just looking at the Internet, what a wonderful source that has been in bringing people together and showing people that there's many of us out there who are starting to feel this and sense this, and we can discuss this with each other, and that we're really not so different after all, that we have a lot of things in common, and one of those things is you know, just this sense of an awakening that's starting to take place now.
And what our guides have told us also is that there are more and more people that are coming forth with messages. And the interesting thing is, with regards to our book, A Book of Insight, going back to the fact we had no idea that we were going to write a book, and what our guides told us, that there are more and more messengers that are coming out in these times with messages of this sort. And the reason for this is to help guide the awakening of mankind. So it's really interesting what's going on the planet right now. And yes, there are people waking up, and there are people not only waking up to their spirituality, but waking up to the greater reality that's taking place on our planet today.
Yes. Now, in your chapter, The Awakening, you or your guides, I should say, you make a reference to 2012. What have they got to say about that time? Because it is expected by many different sources to be the actual time of a massive upliftment into higher vibrations.
Well, what basically, you know, there's people that think that 2012 is going to be doom and destruction. And that's, you know, the furthest thing from the truth. The awakening is basically part of our spiritual evolution, and our guides tell us that it's imprinted into our DNA, and that as we awaken, our DNA will change to reflect that. So they say that just as a house has a blueprint, and when you change the structures of the house, the blueprint changes, the same thing happens to our DNA.
And they also tell us that this date of 2012 is not a date where a sudden massive change is going to take place. They tell us that we are all, as spiritual beings, we are all destined to evolve spiritually. But they give us an example of a rose bush, and they tell us that if you look at a rose bush that's filled with little buds, each of those buds blooms in its own time. The flowers don't all bloom at once. And it's the same with humanity as well. We are all going to bloom, but it's all going to happen within our own times. We're all at differing stages of spiritual evolution, but it's definitely the direction that we're going towards.
Yeah, and what I'd like to add to that is they say that it is connected to 2012, our awakening, and that this awakening will accelerate at this time so that more people will involve themselves in this awakening.
Right, but that, and that it's actually already started.
It's already started.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fine. I suppose the question that I should ask in that case is, although you touched upon it in your answers, is what is the awakening?
Well, it's just, they tell us it's a form of ascension. I mean, when we go back to the conversation we had of everything being vibratory, well, here we are sort of stuck in these physical bodies of ours, but eventually they tell us that, and I mean, this is far into the future, there will be a time where we do not even require physical bodies. They tell us that life exists in many forms, and some of those forms are physical, some are purely spiritual, and some are even strictly cerebral. You know, they exist as thought forms. And
what I'd like to add to that is our guides tell us that the awakening is a spiritual progression of mankind towards the opening of his third eye and the resulting peace that will come to our planet as a result of that. And they tell us that it is through this awakening that mankind will have a fuller awareness of the source and his connection to the source. And they tell us that mankind is meant to become the spiritual being that he once was. And they do tell us, like I said, that there is a connection of 2012 to this awakening, but it is not a negative doom and gloom connection. It is a positive spiritual awakening connection. And also what I'd like to add to that is that they tell us that with this awakening, there will be more caring unity between mankind, and there will be a level of attunement between the races, sexes, and cultures But most importantly, there will be an attunement of the diverse religions as mankind begins to understand the true nature of God and his spiritual connection to the source as a whole. So we've got a lot of good things to look forward to.
Absolutely, yes, I agree with you entirely there. In one of your chapters, there's also a very short mention, I think, about extraterrestrials. What can you tell us about their views on that subject?
Well, they tell us that the extraterrestrials are our brothers and sisters. And they tell us that they have had a hand in our evolution way back many, many, many thousands of years ago. So we are related to them. And they talk a little bit about their methods of travel, and because sometimes we will see UFOs, and suddenly the UFOs will blink out of existence. And I know that you've had some experience with that yourself, Mike.
Yes, you saw
a UFO quite a number of years ago, and suddenly it was gone. And what they tell us about that is that they have found a way to travel through loopholes or jump points. And this is where planes or dimensions intersect. Where planes and dimensions intersect, it creates an intersection point or a jump point. And they use these jump points to enter from their dimension or their plane of existence into ours. And this is why they can blink in and out of our reality. And it's something that's stumped quite a lot of people.
Right. Now, there was a statement in the book that I thought was very nice, which I'll ask you to explain, that if you want to change your life, change your mind.
Yes, and this brings us right back to belief systems and how our belief systems create our reality. And they tell us that since we're babies, we start being imprinted with belief systems, whether they be our parents' belief systems or our teachers or people in our community. And we don't question these beliefs. We just accept them as truth. And as we grow, these belief systems become our truths, and they do affect our reality because they create our reality. So what you think inside, you create outside. And a lot of people, you know, are not raised with the best of belief systems, and they tend to fall victim to these belief systems. So they give us a beautiful exercise in the book of Book of Insight about how to identify our belief systems and how to change them so that we can change our lives. And, you know, the important thing is to remember that beliefs have energy, and energy attracts energetic situations that resonate at the same frequency. And if you want to change your life, then you have to change the beliefs that you hold from positive or from negative beliefs to positive beliefs, because the positive beliefs also have their own resonation and vibration, and those beliefs will then attract situations that resonate at the same frequency.
Yes, I think that's a very powerful statement there, because people might wonder whether they do have beliefs that are really of value to them and giving them some sort of spiritual path to follow, but they wouldn't know how to gauge what to change it to unless they read your book, of course.
and it's wonderful, because the book that our guides have given us is written in such a way that it not only affects people on a mental, cerebral level, but it affects them on a soul, cellular level, which is quite fascinating, because I found that as I was reading the book afterwards, I was not only absorbing it on a cellular level, but it's like they're speaking to your subconscious, like they're speaking to your soul at the same time. And they don't make it difficult to read. It's a very easy read, but at the same time, they explain everything so that people can understand. And I found that after I read the book, my head just split wide open, and suddenly I was thirsty for knowledge, and I just couldn't get enough.
I've been through that phase myself, when you find a source that really resonates with you. It's quite true. You can never get enough. Now, explain this. In your chapter on love, it said, or your guide said, excuse me while I just have a cough, get a slight frog in my throat there. They said, quote, it is through loving others we can love ourselves.
Well, yes. You know, and the interesting thing is that most people love other people more than they love themselves. And we tend to look for love outside of ourselves. And sometimes the lessons that we learn through loving others can make us realize that we need to love ourselves as well. And I think the Book of Insight helps us to realize this.
It's like people who do a lot of charity work, and in spreading their love, their compassion, and their help to people who are less needy, that suddenly has an effect on themselves as well. You know how wonderful it feels when you've helped another soul, when you've helped another soul out of a difficult situation or whatever it may be. Well, what you do for them, in a sense, also resonates back with yourself. And when you help another, you're helping yourself as well. Because we have to remember that we are all interconnected. At the end of the day, there is only one massive energy that we're all a part of. So when you affect one portion of the energy, you're affecting yourself as well. When you're sharing love with one portion of the energy, that love comes back to you as well, and it affects you as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, what our guides tell us is that we are all brothers and sisters, and love each other as you would love the members of your own family, and know that what you give, you will receive. So that, you know, basically love is also an energy. It is the ultimate unconditional energy, and by giving out that energy, you in turn set up a reality where you yourself will be affected by it.
Yes, indeed. Because in the chapter on emotions, they did say we are here for love lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And love in its purest form has no strings attached.
Yes. Conditional love with conditions, they tell us, is conditional love.
Mm-hmm.
So most of us on Earth are practicing conditional love. And what we aspire to is unconditional love, which is love without condition.
Yeah. And when we talked earlier about what is ascension, well, our guides tell us that that is the ultimate ascension, is to grow back towards unconditional love. That's where we came from, and that is the core lesson that we have to learn, is the lesson of unconditional love. And when we have deeply and fully learned that lesson, then we will reach our full ascension.
Right. And of course, in the chapter on love, again, they said the power of love can heal illness and change
mm-hmm.
the course of history.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's how powerful love is. Mm. And what I hope is that our awakening will help us all to realize this. Because love, you know, you've heard about the stories of accidents that have happened where a person has found the strength to lift a car off someone else, and then when they try it again afterwards, they can't budge that car at all. Well, the power of love and the power of compassion for another human being empowers us in this way.
Yeah, and truthfully, love is the ultimate creative force. When we talk about the source having created all that is, all in existence, well, that creation came from a place of unconditional love. And going back to magnetism and the law of attraction, that's another key point to remember, is that when you want to attract something in your life, surround it with the emotion of love, because once again, love is the ultimate creative force. And if you surround something with the true emotion, the true feeling and sense of unconditional love, then you will accelerate the attraction of that specific event into your life.
Well, when they speak of the power of love and tell us that it can heal illness, do they actually tell you in what way it can be used, in the sense that we've all heard of people that do healing and they have certain methods of applying it. But did they tell you how to use your love to heal?
Well, what they told us is that because we have a direct connection to Source, and once again, Source being pure unconditional love, there are healing exercises that we can perform on ourselves. And when we are performing these healing exercises, and we're talking about healing exercises on an energetic level, Reiki is one example of using energy for healing. What you should do is, first of all, connect to your source and focus on that feeling and vibration of ultimate unconditional love. And once you've reached that place, once you've achieved that focus, use that energy, draw it into your body, and use it to create an environment of health. And what they tell us is don't focus on ridding your body of bad health, but rather use that energy to focus on just the thoughts of good health within your body. And, the power of love and the power of thought, too, is just an incredible force. And, I mean, what comes to mind is when we think about, placebo effects. We've all heard studies where you may have a control group. You may have two separate groups, and one group is given the actual drug, and the other group is just given a placebo, which is a sugar pill. But because their belief is so powerful that they're being given the actual pill, it actually does affect them, and they do cure themselves, when in fact the pill had nothing to do with it. It was just their power of thought. Well, the power of love is much more powerful than the power of thought. So the power of love is a great force that we can use to provide healing within ourselves and within others as well.
And also love combined with the belief system that of healing. So, if you don't believe that you will be healed, well, you're going to create exactly that. So it's very important in the healing phase to include your belief system into that phase.
Yes. I notice your guides also remind us to love all of the animals.
Yeah. Very important, because once again, going back to the fact that there is only one energy, there is one source that we are all connected to. There's only one of us here, basically, and animals are a part of that same source. They're fragments, just as we are, of that same source. And it's very important to not only respect one another and treat one another with kindness and love, but to do that with animals as well. I mean, animals, anyone who has a pet knows the power of unconditional love. I mean, our animals love us unconditionally. And the thought of just, when I think of cruelty to animals, it's just such a horrible feeling. I'm frankly really disgusted by it. But the animals are part of this wonderful loving source as well. So
animals are also fragments of God having a earthly experience. Mm-hmm. And
yes.
So I guess in a way you can say that they are our spiritual brothers and sisters. They're just inhabiting a different form while they're on this planet.
Right. Now, getting back to your chapter on emotions, it reads that repressed emotional energy turns itself inwards on the body. So
yes.
That relates a little bit to another part of the book, I think, on anger, where it tells you that anger also sort of causes you self-harm. But what are your thoughts about that?
Well, it makes a lot of sense, because a lot of times when we have anger or we have negative emotions, we find ourselves feeling badly. And anybody that's been angry or had a negative emotion, if they get in touch with how they're feeling, they find that they're not feeling so hot themselves.
Yeah, and what our guides tell us is that emotions are the language of the soul. So your emotions are trying to tell you something. If you're having wonderful emotions of joy and happiness, well, your soul is obviously in a very positive state, and which is, you know, our normal state. It's where we should be. But if you're having emotions of anger or hatred or depression, then your soul is telling you that there is something wrong, and you have to go to the root of that emotion to find out where it's coming from and to resolve it, because these emotions are energetic. Once again, everything is energy. These emotions are energy as well, and energy always seeks to transform itself. So if you're not resolving a negative emotion, with time, that the energy of that emotion will transform itself, and oftentimes it transforms itself into illness within the body. So it's really important to pay attention to your emotions, to pay attention to what they're trying to tell you, and in the case of any negative emotions, to find the root cause of those and work on resolving them.
Yeah, it's important to make a list of your emotions that you experience and to determine what events in your life they're connected to. And this is a way to help resolve the problems and issues in your life by just becoming aware of their existence and what they're connected to.
Now, in the chapter on sorrow, I would think there's a statement in there that might make people wonder, because your guide said, think of sorrow as the absence of love. Now, let's say someone's just lost a loved one. It could be, say, some form of an accident, which you might accept would cause that person a great deal of sorrow. And they might argue that their sorrow comes from their love for the person that they've lost. How would you explain that one?
Well, another way that they explain it is that sorrow can best be described as sadness and indicates a lack in one's life. So a lack in one's life, a loss of someone, is creating a lack in your life, which can lead to this sorrow.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that kind of emotion is a very natural emotion that we would all expect to feel at the loss of a loved one. But it's when that sorrow continues and you don't find resolution for it that then it begins to be a problem. And that at that point you have to sort of go to the root cause of it and figure out, okay, why is it that I'm still feeling this sorrow? What's missing from my life? Because eventually we do tend to get over any major losses in our life. With time comes healing. But, you know, if you're not overcoming that and the sorrow continues, it could be that now there's something else that's causing that sorrow in your life. And as our guides say, it's often a lack of love within your lives.
Right. And I should think if people are aware that they have infinite life, and therefore their loved one has also carried on in another dimension, fully alive, that in some way ought to enable them to release the sorrow. Because I think part of the problem with some people is they don't really believe in any afterlife, and therefore, with the loss of a loved one, they think that's totally 100% permanent, without realizing that they will meet up again.
Exactly, and what our guides tell us about that is that there is a heaven, and heaven is our true home, and this is where we go back to when we leave this this dimension. And basically, they tell us that we've lived and died so many times that it's just it's just leaving one life and going into another life. Birth in that life is death in our life, and vice versa. And they tell us that when we go to our true home, we will meet up again with all our loved ones and our relatives, and that bond is not broken. So it's not that we will never see them again. We just won't see them physically while we're in this dimension. But one day we will see them again. That is guaranteed.
Yeah. And they also tell us that often in our dream states we are visiting with them. And, I mean, we're surrounded by the spirit world, but because of our physical senses, most of us aren't able to perceive our loved ones around us. But our guides tell us that death, as we think of death, does not exist. It's not a reality. Once again, everything is energy, and energy always seeks to transform itself. So this energy that is inhabiting these physical bodies of ours, this energy cannot die. The energy continues in perpetuity. There's no death involved there. It's just basically transitioning itself into another layer of reality, you could say. And one thing about this book, it's really brought a lot of comfort to Tina and myself as well, as we've learned a lot of this through our guides and through the book. And also because we're fortunate enough to be able to channel, we use the Ouija board whenever we're channeling, we've connected with many of our family members who have crossed over. And because we know that we have this connection, we don't feel that great sense of loss because we understand that they haven't gone anywhere. They're all around us. They're always with us. Whether we see them or not, they're there.
Yes. Yes, that's very reassuring. And while we're talking about heaven, what was it that was mentioned in that chapter that said, in effect, that if someone feels they are not ready to die, their life can be reviewed?
Yeah, I think that was a question that I had asked in the book, because, I mean, the ego part of us does not want to die, and I remember asking that question. And yes, and you hear many stories where people have they've crossed over, but they're not quite ready to go, and they're sent back, and they continue to live their physical lives a while longer. Well, our guides tell us that upon what we call death, we can go through a review, and if for some reason we feel like there are things that we meant to, what's the word I'm looking for, sort of establish, there are lessons that we meant to learn this time around, but maybe we didn't get the full effect of the lesson and we'd like to stay around a little longer to continue to learn that lesson, that we're often given the chance to stay longer. But they tell us oftentimes it's the ego that does not want to cross over. It's not the spirit itself, because they tell us that heaven is our home and we all long to go back there. On a spiritual level, we long to be there. It's the ego that's frightened, because the ego doesn't fully understand what it means to cross over.
Right. Now, speaking about heaven, we cannot forget about hell. What would you like to say about that?
Well, what our guides tell us is that hell doesn't exist. That hell was created by traditional religions as a method of power and control over the masses, because, you know, we were all taught about this God that was a jealous God, an angry God, and a vengeful God. But what good does it help to have an angry, vengeful, jealous God if there's no punishment for pissing this God off? So they created hell and the devil in order to keep power and control over the masses through fear. Now, having said that, again, your belief systems play a role in this. And if you think that you are going to go to hell, or if you think you been bad and might go to hell, then you pretty well may create a hell of your own making through your belief systems when you pass over, and you may actually create this hell for yourself. Now, having said that, hell is also a learning experience for the soul, and we won't necessarily spend a lot of time there, because eventually we ask God for help, and there are angels and guides that are ready and willing and able to help us leave that creation of our own minds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our guides tell us that if you've created this reality for yourself, the hell that you've created is not real, but the experience of it will seem very real to you. And guides and angels are sent in to keep an eye on us and to help guide us away from us, to basically show us that, look, this is just an illusion you've created. It's not real. You don't have to be here. You know, let us take you to your true home now.
Mm.
So once again, be very aware of your beliefs.
Well, you undoubtedly will find some people who will absolutely swear under oath that they've seen the devil. I wonder how that comes about.
Well, I mean, once again, it your belief may play a very large role in that. Was it the devil they actually saw? maybe it was a version of the devil that their beliefs created. Mm-hmm. I know that when Tina and I are working with the Ouija board, we personally have never had any negative experiences. Our experiences are very positive, but we're also focused on having only positive experiences. I understand that we live in a world of duality, and just as there is what we would call positive, there is also very negative, and this negative may come in the form of what we might call demonic spirits. But once again, what your focus, where you put your focus and where you put your intention is, you know, what experience you may end up creating for yourself. And, So once again, just be aware of your thoughts, your beliefs, and your intentions as well.
Yes. Generally speaking, I think people are advised not to use the Ouija board because without experience, they can have some nasty experiences. But I believe I'm correct in thinking when you started out, you actually used protection to use the board sensibly.
Yes. Yes, we did. We had one experience way back, you know, when we were in our teens and 20s, that before we used protection, and this entity came through and started cursing. And at that time, we realized that anything can come through. So what we do before each session is we say, we visualize ourselves protected with white light, and we say a prayer of protection. And we also meditate for a half an hour to an hour before every session. And what I just like to let people know is that the Ouija board is a communication tool. It's a divination tool. It's no different than using tarot cards or crystal ball or rune stones. And the difference is that, you know, you really do need, whenever you're using a divination tool, to have positive intent and to have protection. And I compare using a Ouija board to making a telephone call. If you're going to pick up the phone and dial a random number, you don't know who you're going to get on the other line. But if you have an intention of dialing a specific number to reach a specific person, that's exactly who you're going to reach when the phone is answered. So again, it all goes back to intention and protection. And, you know, we believe that the Ouija board has got a bad reputation, and unfairly so, because there's so many people that have had good communications with the Ouija board, and we've always had positive experiences. We've spoken to our spirit guides. We've gotten loving messages. They've given us a book of insight. So we've never had a negative experience, and again, it all comes to protection and intention.
Right. Now, Tilda and Tina, I have to tell you that we've reached the end of the program rather quickly, but it's been extremely interesting talking with you both, and it is a wonderful book, which I would strongly recommend. So thank you very much for coming on to the program. I'm sure my listeners have thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you
so much for having us.
And can we tell your listeners where we can find the book?
Yeah, yes, indeed. I should have asked you that a bit earlier. Yes, I will let them know anyway. Yes, carry on.
Okay. You can go to abookofinsight.com, our website, and every copy purchased from A Book of Insight is a signed copy. You can go to amazon.com, amazon.ca, and in the UK, amazon.co.uk, and also barnesandnoble.com. There you have it.
Right. I will put that information into the archive report anyway for you. So thank you again. It's very nice to speak with both of you. Well, thank you, friends. Sure you really enjoyed that. I'm not making any announcements regarding my guest for next week because I'm still waiting for confirmation that that guest is available. So thank you for being with me. God bless you all. Thank you.